You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Could you whisper in my ear the things you want to feel? I'll give you anything to feel it coming. Do you wake up on your own? I wonder where you are. Give us all your faults. I want to wake up where you are. I won't say anything at all. So why don't you smile?
After 9 on a Friday, that kind of sucks, to be honest with you. Well, we're waiting on the gunner. If you just tuned in, in something that kind of a take your breath away moment. If you've watched any kind of commentary about news, about politics, about diplomacy, you probably are familiar with Charles Krauthammer. He's a conservative. He was a very, very interesting, very, very interesting. He is a very, very interesting man. He was a had an interesting career. And he gave it up and to become a political analyst. And he's been on Fox News Channel, in particular with Bret Baier, and before that with Brit Hume. So to me, pretty smart and balanced guy. And he wrote the following. I've been uncharacteristically silent these past 10 months. I had thought that silence would soon be coming to an end, but I'm afraid. Mike Musselman joins us now. Gunner, what's up? What's up?
What's going on? What's going on? Feeling better.
That's good, man. You were in a state of unauthorized absence, and so which doesn't happen very often. So. So.
It was a rough day. Oh.
So
how to start? What happened?
Well, hold on. Let me finish this. I don't know if you heard this, if you've been watching the news, but Charles Krauthammer just announced that he has only weeks to live.
Oh.
Yeah. But he wrote this incredible letter. He said, I had thought the silence would be coming to an end, but I'm afraid I must tell you now that fate has decided on a different course of action for me.
Right.
Recent tests have revealed that the cancer has returned. There was no sign of it as recently as a month ago, which means it is aggressive and spreading rapidly. My doctors tell me their best estimate is that I have only a few weeks left to live. This is the final verdict. My fight is over. I leave this life with no regrets. This was a wonderful life, full and complete, with great loves and great endeavors that makes life worth living. I'm sad to leave, but I leave with the knowledge that I have lived the life that I intended. And I am grateful to have played a small role in the conversations that have helped guide this extraordinary nation's destiny. Yeah, and if you're familiar with him, he was I think he graduated from medical school, and then in some kind of accident he became a paraplegic. And then he was on his way to greatness, studying psychiatry in the medical field, and when he veered into the world of journalism and public policy. And I mean, you could tell, just from, if you listen to his commentary, he's an incredibly brilliant guy. But after medical school, he became the chief, psychiatry resident at Massachusetts General Hospital. Okay. For those of you that know medicine, that's big. Like those hospitals in the Boston area are big.
Yeah.
Time,
they're renowned.
Renowned. World, renowned. Yeah. Sure. Worldwide yeah. renowned. And so he left that and he started writing politically. Pretty interesting career.
You know what?
But a sad
you know what I liked about him is he was one of those guys that could be non-biased. He could look at an
right.
issue.
Right.
Cause there were some things that I didn't agree with him, but then there were some good things that he said that kind of made me understand, like, okay, here's a guy that's really kind of true non-biased. You know, at first I thought he was a liberal, you know, and then, you know, I think maybe when he first started out, he was more liberal, but then he became kind of center, and I really applauded. I liked listening to him because even though I didn't agree with him, he made you think.
Right.
It made you kind of, you know what? Okay, I'll give you that.
Right. No, you know what? And Trey Gowdy's this way, in my opinion. They're not afraid of the truth. Trey Gowdy came out last week and said, he's a Republican, and he came out and said, you know what? The FBI should have had an informant in the Trump campaign. And now you're going, what just happened?
What?
Exactly. What? And so.
But his reason for it was just spot on.
Right. And so you listen to him, and it's like, you know what? We need more of that, not less.
Yeah.
We need more of that. People not afraid to stand up and tell the truth. And so that's why I love people that do stuff like that. Democrats who will stand up and say something Republican. And, you know, to me, at no small cost to themselves. But Krauthammer was unafraid intellectually to say things that were true and not skewed by talking points or whatever. And so... But a beautiful letter that he's written to his colleagues and fans and whatnot, and just a sad day for those of us that were fans of enlightened discourse.
Journalism.
Yeah, that, you know, kind of like the old McNeil Lear NewsHour, guys that are smart and women that are smart that can sit there and articulately discuss something without getting stupid. And we don't see
right.
too much of that. And Krauthammer was part of that. So sad day. Sad day, but very gracious. So tell us what happened to you. This isn't supposed to happen, man.
And it wasn't a trigger. So I had a migraine, but it didn't trigger, like, medically speaking, like they're, you know, like they have it. So that's a good thing. So the medical.
I don't understand. I don't understand. You had a migraine, but it didn't trigger what?
Like the, you know, the medical way that they usually do. So usually, you know, they would. It was more of a medical. You know, there was something wrong with, like, whatever. It, you know, they didn't spawn from, like, fatigue or stress. I didn't get them from that. I got them from. Other way.
Okay.
Right?
All right.
So, what happened was, and again, Wednesday, great day, had lunch with the guys, having a good time, and then all of a sudden, bam, I mean, I'm doing this, I'm falling asleep, and I wasn't feeling that great, you know, I don't know what was on my mind, I didn't watch anything. I didn't see anything. I didn't read anything. I just, normal day, man. Closed my eyes. I started going to sleep. And as soon as I get into that deep sleep REM, you know,
right.
What happens is I do the old, you know, wake up in the middle of the night, you know, cold sweat. And what I dreamt was, drowning. I was in a Humvee with a bunch of guys. We were in Iraq. It was night. Typical night patrol. And doing our thing. And all of a sudden, the vehicle swerves off. We go into the water. And if you've never been in like a Humvee trainer, you know, let me tell you something. Even in a controlled environment, it is horrible because those armored Humvees go down so quick. As soon as they hit the water, they're gone. You know.
Right.
So we're in the middle of the water, middle of the night, all your gear on, this vehicle stuck, and you know, and it gave me enough understanding of, you know, what the vehicle. People don't get an understanding of how full of stuff that Humvee is got. You know, so from packed and food and extra whatever, and you know, just. There's a lot of crap in there. When we go off into this river, it rolls over into the bank and slip into the side. And so everybody's listening. I never went off in a Humvee. Never. So I don't know what the experience is, but we went off, we were in the middle of the water, and the thing filled up so fast, you couldn't even really get your breath or get kind of a sense of what the hell what's going through. You know, and before we know it, you know, and it was just the screaming of the other guys and to know that, you know, this is it. Can't get out. Doors won't open. I mean, it was just this utter feeling of helplessness, I think, what I was going through. And I shot straight up in the middle of the night. I mean, I couldn't sleep at all, man. I was done. And, it was tough. And I was thinking about it. You know, what, going through my whole mind, like, what the hell just happened? But it was all the details. And what I remembered was, we had a Humvee go off very similar to what I dreamt when we were in Iraq that year. And I knew some of the guys. And it really bothered me because, you know, it's that whole.
It was on the Tartar. You know, it was on the Tartar canal.
Yeah, it was the Tartar. Yeah. And it really bothered me because, you know, you can really, you know, you can have an acceptance of people that fall in battle, you know, you're fighting in a gunshot wound, but something like that is just horrible, horrible. I wouldn't even wish that on my worst enemy, you know? And,
I would wish it on my worst enemy because that's how terrifying.
No.
You know, Mike and I have Mike and I have had these kind of experiences where we were, you know, we're battle buddies times three. So we were there for the same incidents with different. I medevaced those guys.
Yeah.
I medevaced those guys and.
Well, they didn't live.
No, I know. No. They all drowned. And what happened, and it's so horrible. I mean, they roll off the tar.
Here's what got me.
The edge.
I remember reading the report.
Yeah.
And when they looked at the bodies and they had torn their fingernails off. From scraping the side of the inside of the vehicle to get out. I mean, Mac, I was in chills. I was shaking.
No,
I mean, I've never been.
It's one of those things
that
when you.
Heart,
yeah, you were a part of it.
I thought I was going to die. I mean, I woke up. I thought I was going to have a heart attack.
Yeah.
I mean, the fear, like I said, I couldn't even explain the feeling I had in my body. It was like it took me to that moment. Where I was a bystander experiencing that same fear. And, you know, and I tell people all the time, fear's good. Fear keeps you alive. And it does. You know, and it's terror that kills you. But I can see where, you know, fear in a situation like that will keep you alive because you know what to do. It keeps your senses heightened. You know what to do. But I felt the utter helplessness. They couldn't get out. They were trying every way. The doors would not. I mean, it was just like this. Everything failed them. And it's just the terror. And, you know, people don't understand, you know, I think a normal adult goes through his whole lifetime maybe experiencing true terror two or three times in his whole life. And, you know, because terror is on the face of you're going to die. If you don't break out of this response where you're frozen, because it's the fight, flight, freeze. You know, the response to any kind of thing is either fight or flight. Like people don't understand there's another F in this called freeze. And that's when you experience terror. Fear is the transition to, holy crap, if I don't do this, you know, something's going to happen bad. And so you transition, fight, flight. That's fear. Fear is that transition. Terror is the frozen steps, your feet planting roots into the ground, and you're not doing anything. If you experience terror, you will die. And so that's what these guys were going through, because they were fighting. They were trying to fight. You know, they were fighting their way out. And they couldn't do it. They were, I mean, that's what I think that gripped me, Mac, was the fact when you're reading the report afterwards, and they had torn the fingernail, you know, off of their finger, trying to get out. And I don't know why I found that.
Yeah, that's weird. What's weird, Mike? Yeah, that thing is so deep and let me tell you, while you're talking about it, I'm sitting here, and it's going through my head again. And they had just got, you know, we got up armored Humvees, and they were really heavy, and you had to drive them. You had to drive them different. So they were driving. They had just got these things, and you know, these guys were experienced drivers of Humvees and whatnot, but up armored Humvees a little bit different. They were driving near the edge of the tartar, and the side of the road gave way because of the additional weight of the Humvees. And so it gave way just enough that this thing began to slide, and then it rolled. And when it rolls and goes into the soft dirt of the river, you can't get the doors open. And what you had was the vehicle filling up, other Marines trying to do everything they could to open doors, to somehow or other create a hole into this vehicle, and they're screaming. The guys you can imagine. The guys inside are screaming and doing what Mike's describing. The guys outside are doing everything they can to save their friends, and none of it works. And then all of a sudden it goes silent, and just devastating.
Oh yeah,
just devastating. And I'll tell you another one that I'll never forget. There was in the Zaydon area was a vehicle coming back from it was an EOD run. They had gone out and they took care of some IEDs that had been located by, I want to say, Second Recon. And on their way back, they hit an IED. One of the vehicles hits an IED. They all, three of the four, get out. A gunny doesn't get out. As they regroup and to count, they realize he's still in the vehicle. Now there's secondary explosion starts. They go to the vehicle. They're trying to get the door open. Secondary, a round cooks off in the back, splits a corporal's thigh open, and he later commits suicide. You know, I want to say 4 years later, commits suicide. But that night, so they can't get the door open, and the fire now, the vehicle's fully engulfed. There is no fire department. So they have to secure the area, knowing that the bad guys are probably going to come looking, and there's probably going to be a bigger fight. They also, what they personally have to live through, though, is they're smelling the body of their gunny burning in the vehicle. And so I remember seeing they came back, and so we're working on this thing all night, and I saw them in the morning, and I went out and I spoke to them, and I said, hey, you guys were great last night. And they said, and they were crushed. So that one of their corporals, he was an urgent surgical, with his thigh split open, trying to go to it. They made three separate attempts to get to the vehicle and couldn't get to it. And one of them looked at me and they said, sir, we failed. You know?
Right.
I said, let me ask you this. If your gunny was standing here and he saw what you guys did last night, what would he say to you? Would he say that you failed? And they didn't say a word. And I said, I know you feel like shit. Okay, but you did everything that you could humanly do to include one of, you know, Corporal, I think his name was Mendoza, to include Corporal Mendoza now in urgent surgical. And I said, you know, this shit's hard. You guys did good, though. And, I mean, it's just, it's those kind of events, you know, that, fuck, man, it's brutal. So how does that trigger the migraine, though?
Oh, man, it just wrecked, I mean, it really wrecked me, because then I couldn't get to sleep, but then it just, I mean, like I said, it was bothering me all night, and into the wee hours of morning. I couldn't sleep. My head was racked.
Right.
I was confused what was going on. I mean, like I said, I was hurt big time. I couldn't understand. And then it was just a matter of time. I mean, really. So, yep. It was a rough day at it.
Okay, so that dream can trigger a migraine?
No, the dream, what, I don't know, because of the blood rushing to my head or the whatever, you know, just that whole fear factor of what was going on. I don't know if that contributed, I don't know what the contributor was, but it definitely took away my sleep. I couldn't sleep, so now I was up. And my head had all that blood rushing through it of the excitement, you know. So it was that contributed, that affected my mental state, so right. Then it contributed to my normal state, you know, so yeah, it was tough.
And so even though you've had the Botox, you can still, you can still get
it. It's a preventer, you know, so it actually slows down or stops the receptors from doing that, but it doesn't cancel it out. So if I ever get that same thing again, that same, you know, whatever it takes to trigger it, it'll trigger. This just prevents it from happening in the first place. Normally, because normally I'd wake up every day with a headache. And then if I didn't treat it, if I didn't do anything, if I didn't do the right steps, you know, and then it would go right into a frickin' migraine. So, yeah. But then last night, so you're like, dude, where are you? And you called. I saw you calling, but I couldn't talk. I just couldn't talk. And so I swiped it, and it's like a canned message, you know.
And I know, so, and I know he doesn't, yeah, I know he doesn't send cam messages, so I'm like, alright.
Yeah, and said, you know, well, can I call you back later? And then you're like, yeah, I'm like, fucking study, you know, like, I'm like, yeah, whatever, dude. And, but it was funny. And I knew, you know, so I knew, like, oh crap, you know, when I get the 50 million messages and shit like that, if I don't,
what do you mean?
It's a shit show.
It's the way we love you, man. Come on. And I know too. But you know, it's part of the tribal thing, man. It's part of the tribal thing.
Get to live with it, yeah, man. If you don't mind, I get to call this mine. Woohoo!
No, you know, I've never had a migraine, and people I know that have them all say the same thing. Like it feels,
So this one, I had to take the anti-nausea medicine because I had that too. Because if they go, it gets really bad, it starts making me feel ill and I'll throw up. And so with my surgery, I can't throw up. So I just do these heat, and then that made all that pressure in the head worse. So now I get this migraine. It's already that bad. Then you're trying to throw up all that pressure in your head from all the, you know, to dry. I mean, it's just, so I get anti-nausea medicine real quick. I'm like, God, please don't do this. But it was, you know, when I get them like that, the sound of my breathing of going through my nostrils and into my lungs and out, it's so irritating. It sounds, I mean, that sound is literally like a 747, you know, in an enclosed hangar in full afterburn.
The sound of my breathing. So, wow.
Oh. I mean, literally, you get so hypersensitive to light, sound, and touch. You know, that's why, like, I don't like touching anything. God forbid someone touches me. You're like, oh, are you okay? Because it's just, it hurts. It's painful.
Wow. What is that? Is it just the way it affects your nervous system? I guess, right? It must be.
Yeah, I guess.
Wow.
Yeah.
To be in that kind of state. Yeah. Well, so what makes it subside ultimately? You have any idea? Time?
Rest. I did pump a bunch of meds into me, so. I mean, it's a combination of just rest. And I had to clear, it took me for a long time to clear my mind of all of this. I mean, and it brought back every horrible freaking thing I could think of. And I was seeing, like, all the dead bodies, you know, not just ours, but theirs, too. Those were even worse, the different states of decay that these guys were in. Oh.
Yeah, future. those are not pretty. Those,
no.
Yeah, that's some gross. That's some gross stuff.
Yeah. And so, you know, going through all that stuff. And
wow. How'd you, like, I wonder why Pandora's box got open.
I don't know. But then last night's sleep, oh, so restful.
There was no sequel?
Yeah,
you get ready to go to sleep and you go, here we go. I wonder what this adventure is going to bring.
Yeah, but not even the slightest of a dream. You know, just everything. I think I just put my hand on the pillow and it was out. Crazy.
You know, I've started staying up later, and as opposed to going to bed at 9:30, I've been going to bed at 11:30, and I don't know why, but I sleep for like 5 hours. I can sleep for like 5 hours straight, and I wake up and I go,
yeah.
I go, holy shit, man! I just slept for 5 hours. That's awesome. That's awesome. Because it doesn't happen very often. I had a night last week where I swore to God I woke up 100 times. I mean, why does that happen? I don't know. I don't even know. But, you know, you just wake up, you go to sleep, you look.
Know,
I've been asleep for 8 minutes. You're like, what the hell, man? This sucks.
Yeah. I think what happened was, come to think of it, you know, I was thinking about it. I went to bed early on Wednesday. And I think that does it. Because if I don't go to bed when I'm tired, or like when I'm, like, exhausted,
right.
And that's usually around midnight. If I go to bed any earlier than that, then what happens is my mind starts wandering. You know, I start thinking about things. Because I'm getting more comfortable, I'm laying in bed, I'm just kind of like, these stuff, you know, thoughts are running through my head. So maybe that's what it is, you know. So, I love laying in bed, you know, laying there, talking to the wife, or watching TV, you know, hanging out.
Right.
Because the bed, you know, it's so comfortable, it's nice and cool in our room. But the problem with that is if I lay in there and I'm not tired, and I try and make myself tired, then my mind wanders, and then it goes to places I do want to go. So,
let me read.
I got to work on that.
Let me read you an email. Mac, Gunner, you guys have some really fucked up stories. Feel free to keep them to yourself. Hey, too bad, man. You screwed up and listened to the program. He goes on.
Oh, they haven't even heard.
But I will tell you what. If you want an indication of things that, you know, things that traumatize. Um, That incident, though, happened a long time ago. Okay? And, you know, and it was horrible. I mean, I went through another one where a tank flipped upside down, went off a bridge, and
that was the same time.
It was the same deployment. It was up north of. It was up with one where one one.
Results.
Yeah, our friend Dave Furness was up there, and a tank went off an engineer bridge, flipped upside down, and went into a canal, and those guys drowned.
And one guy committed suicide in that tank because he knew he was going to get out.
Right. You know, and it's fucking horrible. Yeah, and it was awful.
Well, see, that's the thing that here's a great opportunity to understand it. People, combat, it's not combat. Okay, it's not people shooting at me that gives me PTSD or PTS. I actually enjoyed that. I really did. I don't know why. It was exciting. It really got me from the heightened. I mean, it was like, wait for that firefight to ensue. It was kind of like exciting and exhilarating. It's like, ooh, this is fun. It kind of stresses, and believe me, their dead bodies are killing them doesn't keep me up at night at all. Not at all. There were times where we would chuckle and laugh as we were shooting these guys because they deserved it. I mean, they pushed you to the point there was no other option. You had to do this. So, I mean, the extreme hatred that you had for some of these people, they deserved everything they got. So those guys don't. It's the fact of seeing or identifying with people that you knew, people that you know or what they went through in their final moments, that's what gets me,
Haunting. Haunting.
Yeah. Like Southern Ross Smith from 3-5, Death Solar and Ray Plower, Jason Moore, all those guys that I knew and I had conversations with, I was with, and, it was just that. The point where I'm like, God, come on, what is going on here? And, I'm going to forget that one when Ross was killed right away in the IED blast. And, Escamilla, he was a brand new PFC. I mean, he was a new kid. And I don't think he might be one of the workups, but then was with us. Not a scratch on him. Not a scratch. But clearly, he was in the blast zone. Ross took most of the blasts. He was heavy for it at the ground. But we had both of those guys in the back of a Humvee racing to Tecatum. And then they're talking to us, and they tell him to calm down because, we were looking, Doc was looking for a wound. We couldn't find a wound. And I don't know if he was going through shock. It was just trying to keep him out of shock. Because shock can kill you. I understand that. But we were trying to calm down, relax him, keep a conversation with him. He was alert. And you could see the panic and the fear in his face, but we kept reassuring him, you don't have a hole in you. You're not bleeding. You're fine. You're going to be fine. We get to Tecatum. The docs come out, grab him, put him on a thing, and bring him in there. So the one that we were kind of, like Ross, we were hoping that maybe we missed something, but we got them in time. Nurse came out and said,
Hold on. Before you say anything else, if we can get our guys, just so everybody knows what goes on in our head, if we can get them there and they're alive, you've just done the hardest thing you're going to do, getting them there alive.
Yeah.
Once they're there, they're not going to die. Our docs are going to save them. They're not going to die. So they go in and you're like, awesome. All right.
Yeah.
Now the good part.
So Ross, like I said, and so she comes out and looks at, we're talking and looks at us and looks at, and she said, we lost both of them. I'm like, what? She goes, well, the sergeant you brought in, he was, DOA, he was dead on arrival. He, nothing, not even, no brain activity, nothing. And but then with that second one, they're like, what do you mean? She goes, I said, what did he die? And she goes, well, the injury, separated his aorta.
Right.
I'm like, what?
Right.
She said the blast trauma, no physical injury, but it, the invisible shockwave literally tore his heart apart. And you were, I mean, again, now we're at this, what?
Yeah.
You know, what are you talking about? We're not, how do you treat that? You know, I'm like, what do you, what? But it was just this whole, you know, and then you go through your mind, like, you know, you're like, shit. And what happened on that one was he was such a new guy. And Ross had been there in the Battle of Fallujah. I mean, he was a vet. He was in the march up, with 3-5, came back, went through the Battle of Fallujah, came back, and now he's on his third deployment, he's getting out, getting married. I mean, the whole life starting with them. Decided, you know what, I'm not gonna let my buddies go. He's a sergeant, got there as a private. I mean, he was one of those seasoned guys. And so he was on patrol and they, you know, wasn't paying attention and piece of junk or something, he stepped on it, the new guy, and, you know, Ross is the one that took the front of the blast, but this guy, he didn't, and that, so those are those type of things. It's like, those moments are in my head. That's what gives me, like, I don't know, that's what stresses me out.
Oh, no, but it's crushing, though. Yeah. It's crushing. I can remember, you know, I can remember an incident that happened to Dave Furness. We were building a new firm base between a city called Karma and Abu Ghraib. So they were north of Fallujah, and this thing had been kind of what we call a rat line, a line that they use. So we're building a firm base, and so it was in. At the time, Lieutenant Colonel Furness, who you've heard on the program before, now Major General Furness,
right,
getting ready to take over the 2nd Marine Division. And so, he went through to check out how the digging was going. So you had a squad of Marines there, a reinforced squad of Marines. You had the engineers inside with all their engineer shit building it, you know, offloading HESCO barriers and all that was going on, all done very rapidly as you stand this thing up. And then he took his PSD, his jump, and they were going through there to pick up somebody who had to come back to Camp Fallujah for a dental appointment.
Right.
And that thing had been shot at a couple rounds. Well, what that was bad guy mortarmen sinking their base plate. And when Dave's PSD got there, they got, I want to say,
mortar.
They got 11 to 16 rounds of 120 millimeter mortar, and about half of that landed inside the firm base because after they sunk the base plate, right, they had a firm mortar system, and they had mortarmen good enough. They direct laid on it, and they pounded the shit out of it. There was a kid who died, who they brought back to life three different times during the medevac. He was on a 46 going to Takatam, right? And you're hearing that he crashed, and he's back. We got him back, and you know, I want to say he crashed once before, and then they got him back, and then he crashed twice in the helicopter, and they got him back, and you're like, kid's a fighter, and then you hear, you know, from your PEC, the patient evacuation coordination cell, they all of a sudden they pass you a note, and it's like Lance Corporal so and so didn't make it, and you're just like, it's
right.
Just like crushing, it just sucks. And then you know another, you know, Mike went out and actually worked with these guys, but we were in Afghanistan. In Afghanistan. We had these guys that were B-Doc, and they secured our base, Dwyer, and they sent a patrol out of vehicles.
Are you talking about the reservists?
Yeah, they sent a patrol out, and we normally we have pretty stiff protocols the way vehicle patrols. There had to be a mine roller in front. Well, they got out and they were driving on their own. They had an MATV, which was the smaller of our variants. The driver's not wearing a seatbelt. IED goes off, and he's thrown against the steering wheel, and it ripped his aorta out. Right? You're looking at the damage to the vehicle, and it wasn't catastrophically killed. I mean, the vehicle was jacked up, but those things were meant for IEDs. And he's dead, and you're like, what happened? Why is he dead? You know, look at the inside of the vehicle. Looks, I mean, there's shit everywhere, but it looks okay. And it's like, wasn't wearing a seatbelt. And you're just like, fuck, no. Fuck. I know I'm not supposed to say that.
Yeah, I remember that.
But, and it's like, God, you know, if he has that seatbelt on, he's alive. And it just, as I think the word haunts is good. Obviously, Mike haunted by it, by those stories, but.
Yeah, and I don't know why. I mean, like I said,
where does it come from?
I thought for a longest time I was through all that stuff, you know? Because it was like, it wasn't bothering me anymore. I was like, oh, sleeping peaceful. But I guess not, man. It really, something, and I don't know what triggered what. It really, I don't. It just, I can't understand. I can't get a grip. Like, well, don't understand.
There's another email. Mac, you were talking about suicide earlier today. I'd be curious to hear what the Gunner has to say about it. Story, Mike, suicide is now the 10th leading cause of death in the United States. Famous chef Anthony Bourdain hangs himself in his hotel room. I mean, a guy at the top of his career, he's world renowned as a chef. We talk more about suicide. We have more people out there willing to help. We talk about, you know, your feelings more, yet that number continues to go up. Any thoughts on that?
Well, again, it goes back to, you know, I said this before, and I don't know if people will get alarmed by it, but I understand it. I really do. I know it's wrong. Believe me. It's both religiously wrong, morally wrong, ethically wrong, everything wrong, you know. You don't. Nothing in the world is that bad to end your life. And that's the blanket statement we always tell people.
Right.
Nothing in the world is that bad. Really? In your world, right? I understand it. I really do. Why people do that? Like I said before, you know, hey, when it was really bad, when I was really bad in the pain, if I would have, you know, if someone would have told me, like, hey, this is the way it's going to be the rest of your life, there's no cure, dude, I would have punched out a long time ago. Because, I mean, no way. No way would I want to go through this all the time. You'd have to be a fool.
Okay, come on. That's physical pain.
And even mental. You know, the guilt people live with.
So let me ask you this. So what you just said, you're a person that people hear that from probably shock them. You know, here's a guy who's a fighter. Here's a guy who's all these things, and he says something like that. So what is it? The loss of hope?
Well, exactly. I mean, if I know that it's not going to get any better, this is the way it's going to be. This is now the new norm. It's like, come on. And what really bothers me is when people say, oh, come on, you can suck it up. Like, what? Do you understand I can just imagine, and pain comes in different forms. It can be physical pain. It can be mental. I would say, in some cases, mental trauma is worse than physical pain, because with physical pain, you could take a pill. You could take something that would alleviate that pain temporarily or permanently, you know? But when people don't understand that and they just throw a blanket statement like, oh, that's horrible. I don't understand. What a waste. Yes. But I mean, to understand it in the fact that, okay, hey, don't treat this as it's a bad thing. There's a horrible, this, don't talk about this. You know, this is something we don't talk about.
Yeah, but Mike, we talk about it more.
But we feel shame.
Right?
It's shame. If someone comes in and
says, Mike, it's suicide,
you look at him like, what the hell is wrong with this guy?
But it's more, it's less shamed than it's ever been in our history. It's more discussed.
No, it's still shame.
Okay, well, but that's fine, but it's less shame than it's ever been. Hell, when somebody commits suicide, we don't even say that it's suicide. We say, maybe took their own life. Or, you know, we don't use the word suicide anymore. So, with all this attention and focused on it, all these assets pushed towards it, the number continues to grow. I don't understand that. I understand what you're talking about, and I understand people have structural damage inside of them that goes back to probably when they were young people, and they fake it through much of their lives, and then it becomes unbearable for them, and they lose
right.
hope. But I don't understand why is that number growing? Like, it's always been around. I would think that, it would be hopefully a relatively constant percentage of people that are damaged as young people, and then as life gets more complicated, more difficult, at some point there's a fault line, it breaks, they have an earthquake, and they end their life.
But I still think it's a shamed thing, because families don't want to talk about it, so then who in your inside circle can you talk to? You're right, maybe it's a society, you know, people where we look at it more now in a different light, but nothing's changed as far as the family, the family net, you know, that they live in.
Right.
Friends.
Right.
You know, people, I guarantee you, if friends are talking to friends and they're saying, oh man, you know, I don't know, there's something, you know, there's not enough training about it. Schools definitely, schools only talk about it when it happens in the school. There's no progressive teaching, you know, like, hey, how do we identify this? And, you know, it was like, same thing with the Marine Corps. I used to crack up that the Marine Corps had, you know, suicide awareness training.
Annual training.
And then when someone actually did it.
Right. And describe the class like, all right, everybody listen up. Don't kill yourself. That's an order. And then, you know,
well, no, you
then,
get
we,
some,
then we roll the chaplain
like every
out
every
there.
Every other class.
Right.
You get some bozo staff sergeant who's been fired from his job as platoon sergeant, who works in the S3 shop, who's responsible for giving these classes as annual training. He's reading off a PowerPoint that was given to him by some idiot in Quantico who, you know, that basically got this from some website or some kind of authorized DOD suicide awareness training, and it's so outdated, it's so one point, like, it only works for this type of individual
right.
in this type of situation. I mean, it's just such an asinine thing that we do, and it really, you don't pay it the attention that it should. And again, people get alarmed when you say, yeah, I understand it is an option. You're not supposed to say that. Well, what do you want me to say? Continue to lie? Suicide is not an option. Okay? Apparently, it was. You know how I know? Because he's dead. So, suicide is an option, boys. If it is an option, how do we get it off the table? Don't tell people it's a negative. I hate that line. Suicide is not an option. Hey, shithead, wake up. It is. You know why? He's dead. It obviously was an option. So how do we get it? And you can't shame it.
No. I
don't want to make it a shaming thing, but that's what we do, man. We make it a shaming thing.
Yeah.
We do. Society, you and
yeah,
I. Yeah,
but I agree though. But again, it's less shameful than it's ever been. I mean, years ago we didn't even talk.
Years ago we didn't even talk about it.
I know less shameful doesn't mean there's not shame associated with it.
Yeah,
it's not something that we don't want to talk about. But I mean,
and the piece of shit on the soundbox smells left. So it's really, it's not as stinky as it used to be. Still shit, man.
Yeah, but it's something we talk about. So I guess my question is, so why does it continue? Why is it continuing to increase?
Because we glamorize it, or we either are glamorizing it or we're shaming it. There's no in between. We're not trying to figure it out. Why do people commit suicide? I mean, think about it. Look back to the training. Remember this training? Why do people commit suicide? Like you just said, loss of hope. Well, yeah. Okay, so, but more importantly, why did they lose hope? What caused it? You know, do they have a support network? Do they have friends that they can trust that wouldn't, you know, judge them? Go, ooh.
Let me ask you this. When you're feeling like that, could your friends stop you from doing it if you...
No. But, you know, anybody who's going to really do it, there's no way to stop them at all.
Right.
And I would say there's only a very small window to really understand that that's what they're going through. So you don't, I mean, how do you identify it? You're not a clinical psychiatrist. Right. You know, Eddie's loved the whole thing. Like, they could become withdrawn. You know how many people in my life I would have got them if I would have used the, you know, like I said, the military or a standard, the DOT standard for identifying suicide, it would be suicidal? Every Marine. Drinks too much, becomes withdrawn, isolates themselves.
Moody.
Talks about faith, you know, end of something, like they don't have nothing more to live for. I mean, just about every Marine in their career has done that. I'd like to report my whole entire platoon. Put them on suicide awareness, you know?
Right. Right. I'm with you.
Look at it differently. And we have to accept it as just not as a course, you know, there's people out there I understand. I'm one of them. It is religiously completely wrong.
Right.
You know, it's supposed to be an unforgivable thing.
But that isn't when you think about it though, that's not, your family comes, is in line of things that factor into the way you think. You know, the religious piece is not at the top of the list.
But people use that, man.
Right. No, I know.
They're like, you can't do this. Think of all that, you know.
Yeah.
And let me tell you something. If you want to push somebody over the edge, use that as an excuse.
It's a mortal sin. As a Catholic, it's a mortal sin.
No one's going to forgive you.
Yeah, you can't do that.
Oh, okay, well, shit. If I'm not forgiven like that, then
I'm screwed.
I guess I'm screwed all the way. So, boy, you know, if they're just on the edge thinking about it, boy, you just pushed them right over the edge now. I mean, okay, well, shit. These people think that I'm going to pull them back from the edge because I'm going to tell them that it's a mortal sin. Not even God will forgive you. All right, well, shit. I'm done then anyway.
Exactly. I'm out.
Yeah. Crazy. I always like that. I don't get it. Man. Don't get it.
All right. Here's another email. I think until we all accept that sometimes there's nothing you can do. I think until we all accept that people get damaged. And as much as we'd like to believe that we can fix everybody, you can't.
Right.
And I believe Gunnar said something that is a factor in its growth, because I've been sitting here thinking about the same thing, Mac. Given mental health in a society for so many years, you would think the number would fluctuate between X percent and Y percent pretty much as a percentage of the population. When you see the number go up, What are the footnotes that go with it that explain the increase? My own opinion is that I believe that young people see it as not so wrong as we older people see it. I think they also see celebrities and other people doing this, and that has become much more common. And so there aren't the taboos associated with it now that there was when we were younger. I'm not saying that explains all of it, but I think that certainly has something to do with the rise, especially with young people. I think that's probably correct, all of it.
No, yeah. And, you know, I once was told, you know how you stop racism?
How?
You know how?
No,
you stop talking about it.
Oh, right.
No, seriously, think about it. You stop talking about it, meaning you stop having the differential conversation of it. There is no color, you know, there is no separation. It's just equal. And the same goes with, you know, like his comment was, or that person, I believe that too. Like, if a celebrity, Anthony Bourdain, commits suicide, it's on front page news.
So if we don't put it on, and you look at, if we don't put it on front page news, that will help.
Well, you don't advertise it, so you're not, you know, like a celebrity. Think of all the musicians that commit suicide and celebrities.
Right.
How you know, and they make it so romantic, like Kurt Cobain. Shit,
right.
There's a movie about it, him committing suicide,
right?
And it's filled with music and all this other turmoil. Which some people. Man, that would be great.
No,
I'd love to have that.
You're talking about the glamorization of it.
Yeah.
Right.
Instead of, you know, if we're going to shame it, shame it. If we're going to glamorize it for certain classes of people, like rich people and celebrities,
yeah.
Oh, man, if they commit suicide, that's romantic. How beautiful. Romeo and Juliet being played out in the center stage in real life.
But the people that produce the movie are going to tell you that we did it because there was so much interest, and we
want the message to get out.
Right.
Yeah. But it's not the way it is. I mean, it's the stupidity of it.
And by the way, we think we can make money on it too.
Oh yeah. Well, that's you know, it'd be a different thing if 100% of all of the proceeds of this is going to suicide, some kind of nonprofit suicide awareness, you know. Counseling, but yeah, you're right. It's you can't do this shaming of it in one, you know, one corner of our mouth, and then the other, we're doing the man. What a romantic story this is about, like Kurt Cobain committing suicide. Oh, a tragic. You
know? I don't agree with not talking about it though. I think
no, I don't agree.
I think what you have to do is you have critical. For instance, Mike, you should have taught the suicide class. Hey, everybody know me, Gunner Mike Musselman? All the Marines are like, yeah, whoa, right. And then when you look and you say, I thought about killing myself, all of a sudden the whole place goes silent. What? Guy's fucking Superman, man. He's got all the action gear, right? He's got all the doohickeys. He's a combat guy. And, you know, he's funny, he's happy all the time. Say that again? And, you know, we found that when we taught classes post-deployment training, and we'd send units to go to, we'd get someplace and kind of decompress for a few days before they went home. And there was a list of classes that you were supposed to give. The chaplain, the site guy gave them, and the results were shit. And then what we evolved is the most credible guys in the unit began to give the classes. And that's when the classes began to mean stuff. And because those guys had the credibility, the combat credibility in their unit. as quality people, as quality leaders, and somebody who had shared the experience, who are now going to get up and talk. And those guys talking about it. So it's not just talking about it. It really depends on who's talking about it, and can you make a difference? Because if you pie it out, the population, there's some people that no matter what you say, you are having it, it's not going to impact them. There's going to be a whole right. bunch of people though that when you say that I've thought about it, and let me just tell you what I think about. I think about my wife. I think about my daughter. I think about the pain that it will inflict. And I know that I have to do everything I can because I would never.
Well, that's what I know. That's right? Not a solution then.
What's that?
It's not a solution at that point. That's just, it's a cop-out.
Well, no, the, but when you tell them, I know that I don't want to inflict that kind of pain on them. And so I know I have to go and get all the help that I need. Because my instinct is that I don't want to live anymore. But.
Well, it's not that I don't want to live it. I'd love to live. I want to live forever. I just don't want to live in excruciating pain.
Right. Right. But when they hear that from a guy like you, there's a huge segment that have seen other people do it, that have contemplated it themselves, probably haven't told too many people about it. And then they hear that kind of discussion from you, I think. That's the message that they need to hear. Those are the kind of people that they need to hear it from and say, look, man, we can help you. Are you ever going to get that voice out of your head? Probably not. But we can help you learn how to understand it a little bit, maybe how to mitigate it a little bit, and also not be afraid among people that care about you and people you trust to bring it up. And you know what? And that's probably as good as we can do.
Right. Well, and I looked at it as, I'm not ashamed that I had that thought. I mean, that's a natural thought.
Right.
You know, and I know, I guarantee you that there's more people that don't admit that have actually had that. And then I look at that as that's more shameful, really. You're judging others and you had that same kind of thought. Come on.
Yeah.
What makes you better than, you know, anybody else?
No, I'm with you. If you can't look at people and tell them that you have, whether it be just nightmares, you have sleep issues, you have anger issues, if you can't tell the truth, in my opinion, you're not doing your part for the tribe, because you, especially young guys need to know that. Like what?
Yeah.
That dude has those things? Shit.
Especially if people look up to you in any capacity and they understand that you go through the same issues. Then they can relate. You know,
right.
Holy crap.
Then I'm good to go. If he's got the same issues as me, I'm good to go because he's good to go, even though neither one of you is good to go. And so I think that's a huge part of leadership is just sharing.
That's where we start.
Right. Right. And again, the other thing is once you reveal that, you know, I tell a story about going fishing with my oldest at Lake O'Neill at a family day, and I hate fishing, right? But he wanted to go fishing, so we buy the bullshit pole. We're down fishing. Now every Marine, right, in the company who's a fisherman comes over and says, hey, Captain Mac, didn't know you love fishing. I'm like, I hate this shit. Okay? But it served as a basis for a conversation. And then it revealed part of me to them that they could latch on to come and talk to me. It gave you access. And it's the same thing the more you share of yourself, the more you reveal yourself to guys and girls that you lead, the more you get access to them. Like what? And
well,
I think
the fact that
the mental health piece is
you're
huge.
You're human.
Right.
Not everybody's perfect.
Right. And you can imagine the aura that the gunner cuts in a large organization. And until he says that shit, he is a no-shit action figure. Right? Ball-busting, funny, right? Blah, 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 blah. Right? He's the poster child. And then all of a sudden he says that, and then you get everybody's attention. What did he just say?
Yeah, and it's the thing. I don't want people, like, feeling bad. Like, oh, man, that's a bad thing. You're not looking for sympathy. You're looking. You want people to accept you for who you are. And if they can't do that, well, then screw them.
Right. Right. All right. What are your plans for the weekend?
We're going to go, the wife and I are going to go see a movie.
What movie?
We're going to go see Ocean's 8 with, you know, the girl.
Yeah. So what have you heard about that?
I think it, doesn't it come out today?
I've heard it's got very mixed reviews.
Oh, really?
Yes. I don't want to, you can review it on Monday, but that's what I've heard.
Well, and, you know, the whole point of, I don't care if the movie's horrible. It's just the time that you spend with somebody.
Well, listen to you. Doing a little couple therapy now. Love that. Listen to you.
No, it's just fun.
Right.
It's not the experience you go through. It's who you go through the experience with that makes it memorable.
Whoa. One more email.
That's kind of deep, huh?
That's what this email says. You know what? Every once in a while, you two ass clowns do this. Just when I think that you're the two most superficial people I've ever heard in my life, you bust out a discussion like today, and you make me think that there's actually a second-level brainwave in each one of your dumbasses. Please stick to one version or the other. Stop doing the Sybil.
Confusing people.
Yeah, stop doing the Sybil thing. You're confusing us. Sorry about that. It's not my fault. It's Gunner's fault. I didn't want to talk about this. I'm just going along with it because he's talking about it. I don't know. Colleen is, I think she's spending the night someplace. Yankees and Mets play tonight. I'm kind of fired up about that. So did you watch the Stanley Cup Finals last night? It was awesome.
Mm-mm.
Oh, man.
Good on the Washington, man. They played a great season.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, and it was a good, last night, it was fast, it was violent, they scored a bunch of goals, there was enough fighting and shit that went on. It was just awesome sports. And then afterwards, the best ceremony in sports, the shaking hands and then raising the Stanley Cup. It's cool. Cooler than hell. And then we went to Hank's Mexican Food, a little hole in the wall place near my house, and Hank's chicken enchiladas with mole sauce, rice and beans.
Oh,
awesome. Absolutely, positively awesome. So, anyway.
Traditional Mexican food, that's all I want.
Sitting outside on the veranda there at about, I don't know, 8:45 last night with three of my four kids, which was, made it a lot of fun. And, so, a little bit of heaven on earth. A little bit of heaven on earth. You know, I think of what Ken Pipes wrote in the letter that he left for his family after he passed away, and when at those moments now, and what he wrote was, I don't know what the future holds, but for me, heaven was being with you. And I just think it's one of the coolest things I've ever heard anybody say and ever leave in the wake of their death. To write that to your family, to me, is what it is to be a leader, what it is to love people, and to leave them with such a warm feeling when they're feeling so empty. But it is. It's nights like that where you're sitting around with, you know, our oldest is in Quantico. He's married with a kid. And so, but to have, you know, your other three together doesn't happen very often. And all in one spot, having dinner, and, you know, just listen to them argue and bitch at each other, and remember them as little kids. Eating outdoors on the veranda of a Mexican restaurant. Awesome. Awesome night. So, anyway. So, maybe I'll see if I can replicate that again. I'm not sure if I can do it, but maybe I will. So, anyway. All right, man. I hope you feel better. Are you feeling better today?
Oh, I feel great. Yeah.
All right. So, do you have to now?
Normal.
Do you have to take medications for a few days, or do you just one and done, or how do you do that?
Yeah, just one and done.
Get you over the hump and then back to normal?
Yep.
All right. All right, man. I'm glad you feel better.
All right, man. I'll talk to you.
Yeah, have fun at the movie. Have a good weekend.
All right.
There you have it. Michael Musselman from Texas. He's a Red Sox fan, but we don't talk about it. The Red Sox actually are in second place right now. This is from New Jersey Man, otherwise known as Smitty. I would rather watch paint dry than go fishing. Yeah. I'm anti-fishing, just so everybody knows. Anti-fishing. Like, I'm going to compete with a fish? Like, what is that? Come on. That's a sport? I don't know. I think I find that demeaning. The fish and I are going to compete? Yeah, I've never, man, I know. I'd say this shit when I did my show in North Dakota. So it's on the North Dakota and Minnesota border. They're born with fishing poles in their hand and a shotgun in the other. I mean, it's outdoor land. Minnesota, the land of 10,000 lakes. And they fish every goddamn one of them. And I'd say, fishing's for morons. They'd call up and snap, "Matt, you need to go on the Red River with me." I'm like, yeah, I don't want to go and get my ass eaten by mosquitoes, okay? All night. That doesn't sound like fun with me. Oh, we'll catch some catfish and maybe some walleye. Like, yeah, I'm sorry, bro. I'm out. Welcome back, Gunner. Matt can't carry the water without you. In all seriousness, glad you're doing well. Here's another text message. Mac, on a serious note, you guys provide us with a little glimpse today of what veterans live with. You don't do it very often, but it's pretty sobering to sit here and listen to the things you guys talk about. The Gunner talking about dreaming about Marines drowning. You talking about Marines sitting on a secure perimeter all night, smelling the smells of a vehicle burning with their gunny inside of it. Not sure how you all live with this kind of shit. But God bless you. Have a great weekend. Thanks for giving us a little sense of what veterans come home with and how they live with it. The increase in suicide is very sad. I do believe the taboos associated have gone away. And so things that might have kept you from committing suicide are no longer there, especially for young people today. I would be curious to know what age segment and the other demographics associated with the increase in suicide. Is it across the board? You mentioned in the states that are in the top six, that most of them have large Native American populations. If that is a footnote, I think it gives us some clue to where we might start lowering the number. And that is doing something about the quality of life for Native Americans on reservations across the country. Anybody who's ever worked near one of them will tell you that is not a pretty existence. Yeah, Friday's not supposed to be so heavy, man. Between the chef talking about Anthony Bourdain's suicide and then the Gunner talking about it in a completely different way. Shit, man. Anyway, it happens. Welcome to our world, right? It's the tribe. So, we're not afraid of it, though. So, it is what it is. Have a great weekend on a Friday. in the first week of our third year. Thanks for listening. Again, my thanks to, as always, the Gunner for coming on. He is a huge fan favorite. For all the reasons that that everybody loves him. And yeah, I'm not gonna lie to you, I was concerned last night. Because I know that he doesn't drop off the radar like that without a text or something like that. And so, you know, when are you concerned enough? So it was good to hear his voice again. Anyway, have a great day. Have a great weekend. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Bob Nielsen for being a great friend and mentor to All Marine Radio. Thanks for all the people that support it and who listen to it. So have a great day on a Friday. All Marine Radio is over and out.